Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, hope it's nice and nice. Got them out. Met Weber on the board. SP futures down 15. NASDAQ futures down 40. Dow futures down 160. So we're heading a little south here, heading into the G20 summit, which starts today. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing okay. What's cooking?
Well, the summit starts today, except for who? Just saying.
Well, no Putin meeting. That got canceled.
Well, Angela Merkel's plane conked out. They had to come get her in another plane.
Oh.
That's not good.
And they didn't have another one for her, huh?
Well, she actually's going to fly. Get a load of this. Maybe our people should. She's going to fly the last part commercial. I'm assuming first class, but commercial.
Yeah, I wish all of the every politician in Washington should have to fly commercial.
I think maybe most CEOs should as well. What about the guy who runs the board of trade?
Most CEOs should. You know, it would be a way to have some touch with normal people. In fact, they shouldn't even be allowed to fly first class.
Why would you think that when you reach that high of a spot, why would you think that they should feel that they have to deal with the great unwashed like us?
The rabble.
That's the rabble.
Well, you know, as they say in the Army, RHIP, rank has its privileges.
Yes. So, Manny, you picked that term up. You like that term, don't you?
I do. It's a good one.
And that came from Shakespeare, correct?
It did, as far as I know.
Yeah. See, Maddie's a Shakespearean scholar. You didn't know that, Kevin.
Definitely not. But
I did not know that. But has he named, look, if he's really a Shakespeare guy, has he named a softball team or a basketball team after a Shakespearean character or term?
Probably not.
Definitely
like,
not.
You know, great unwashed would be a great name for a for a softball team.
Yes. I definitely remember when I used to go to the Bear games on the one side where the non-seat license group is, it is definitely the great unwashed. They don't want you mingling with the other dudes. Just saying.
Yeah, they're not related to Shakespeare, but the other name that I always thought would be really good for a team would be Fear Itself.
Yes. God, wouldn't be so bad. Hey, this week, without going through it a little bit, other than the fact that the lessons I'm trying to impart to listeners, not that they don't know the stuff themselves, maybe it's locked in their history or whatever about how tariffs actually were. Guess who my biggest competitor is on the other side? The good news is, Kevin, we're not getting into a huge political thing, but thank God, I think that most people are over the president's tweets. I don't know why this week I just got turned down.
Oh, I don't think so.
Well, I'm saying most rational people maybe, but this week this had to be his worst week. One day ranting and raving about how the former Fed chair was 5'3" and she couldn't have that job because she was too short. Do people even read any of that stuff? That's unconscionable from a fourth grader. You'd tell a kid to go stand in a hall for a while, and then the next day who's the guy who's the I should know the name. The guy who's actually in charge of the investigation, not Mueller, the guy above him. The guy when Sessions took, recused himself, was the deputy,
Rosenstein.
He belongs in jail? Your number two guy in the Justice Department belongs in jail because...
Well, there's a lot of people who are down on Rosenstein and there's some documentation. You know, things like, saying, should he have the president declared mentally unstable so they can remove him from office. That's documented. Now, he says he was joking or he was being sarcastic, but I would like to hear the whole conversation.
I'll tell you what, he's getting close. He's getting close.
Yeah. But the point being, I understand why people don't like Rosenstein. Nevertheless, should he be in jail? Well, if he should be in jail, then he should be fired now.
Well, it's not a question.
So either do the deed or don't do the deed. You know.
All right. Here's my concern: is it's not to me whether and there might be something about this guy's past or whatever that maybe. I don't know. I'm not saying if he broke a law, okay, that's one thing. But what our president is telling, see, Kevin, you have a fault the same as mine, by the way. When you hear something,
I can fix that now that I know it.
Yes. Well, no, you can't really because I can't fix mine. When you hear something, you assume that other people hear it kind of the way you do, and they just don't. I mean, everybody just. And I got this lecture from a serious lecture from somebody on the trading floor who was a clerk and is a friend of mine. It's kind of a nut job, but a nice guy. And one day I said something to the effect of, "Well, that guy's a pretty good guy." He looked at me and said, "Chief, you got to wake up one of these days." And I go, "What do you mean?" He says, "You're the smartest man I've ever met, but sometimes you're the biggest blithering idiot I've ever met as well." He said, "You're a big, huge dude with two big guys that work for you. You're on the board. You're the only guy in the whole place that has a floor official badge and a board of director badge. Of course he's going to treat you right. He doesn't treat anybody else right. Open your eyes. You're the only one he treats right." And you know what? To this day, I remember that lecture. You don't always listen. I mean, you can't assume. I mean, how many times have you and I, you may be sitting there bored, have I gone through how tariffs work? And who actually pays the tax? And yesterday I made a bet to three different people, $1 if we could do it. If you went in the bars on Irving Park or the bars on Western Avenue, it said, who pays for the tariffs? 90% of the people are going to say the Chinese. Right here, yesterday the president says, this is his tweet, "Billions of dollars are pouring into the coffers of the USA because of the tariffs being charged to China." To China, not on Chinese goods. To China, and there's a long way to go. Now he either... My question is, which is worse? He either doesn't understand what he's doing, which means he has no business in that job, or he does understand it and he just feels like lying to people is the way to go. I honestly don't know what it is. Do you?
I suspect it's the latter. I don't know that for sure. And honestly, we go back to your opening comment about are people taking the tweet seriously? Tom, long ago I stopped really caring.
I
see people. I know way too many people that are paying such close attention to all of this, and then they get outraged and go running to wherever they have to go to complain. You know, to express the outrage.
I agree.
Life's too short. I can't spend my
with
time
you on
being outraged all the time and looking for it. That's the part that kills me is, turn them off your Twitter feed.
Well, I understand that part. And by the way, I've done that. But the last week we've reported the chairman of UTEX doesn't seem to be a bad guy. I'm guessing he's conservative. I don't know. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Most chairmen of big companies are. If he is, he seemed like, he goes, this is costing us this year $170 million. And we had another person who came out and said, by the way, we think the average American by the end of next year, if you look at the tariff money this year at 18 versus 17, it's not that much different, Kevin. So I will not make the same mistake. I will say in 2018, the tariff increase into the federal government is only up like about 7% from last year. It's next year everybody's worried about, especially if this next round comes through. And people are saying it's going to cost the average American next year if the next round goes through. And plus, now that the ones that have been there for the whole year and will be next year, assuming there's not a deal, that it's $2,200. Well, this is economics, Kevin. This is a taxation that most people have never seen. If you weren't alive before 1914 when the income tax came in, you weren't alive, and we weren't when tariffs were half the income of the federal government. Now they're whatever, a small piece compared to income taxes and other stuff. But there was a time. So, but I mean, the last thing you want since most people are working a job, have kids, doing the best they can, working overtime, working two jobs maybe, last thing you need is your president spewing economics that's wrong, I think, especially when people are paying for it. Okay. But then again, you hit a nerve for me, because that's what I love to do is economics. So maybe it's more of a nerve with me than other people, but I think people should at least know the mechanism. No, you're paying. It's like Bernie Madoff. You know, well, why did you invest with Bernie? Bernie had an angle. He had an angle. We knew, everybody knew that he was doing something gray, and Bernie had the angle, and they didn't know what it was. They just knew they were getting more money than the next guy. They knew there was a chump there someplace. They just didn't know they were the chump. Is that fair?
It might be. Yeah, that might be fair.
I think that's such...
I'll put you on that a little bit, but yeah, it probably is.
I think that's the best way I've ever heard it put, though, Chief.
Yeah.
They knew there was a chump somewhere. They just didn't know they were the chump.
That's exactly right. I mean, some stuff... I don't know, Kevin, I'm going to tell you a quick story. We'll get into some of the sports, because there's so much sports at school. When I did the work for Nancy Sheehan when she was running for treasurer in Illinois, I wrote the finance section. But there wasn't much to write, because in those, and probably still today, the only thing that a treasurer of a state can really invest in is U.S. Treasuries. So if you're the guy from Iowa, or Maddie, because he's from Iowa, and I'm the guy from Illinois, if the treasury rates are roughly, you know, say 4, they go from 2 on the short end to 6 on the up end, I'll say in other times than now, and now, I'm going to say 1 year I'm going to be sneaky and invest in the long term and get away with it. And I'll make 4.7%, and you'll make 4.5%, and I'll win our dollar bet. And the next year, the long end will come down, and you'll be better on the short end, and you'll make 4.4%, and I'll make 4.2%, and I'll owe you a beer type of thing. And all of a sudden, there's these two counties. I'm looking there, going, these idiots are making 9%. Who the hell are these guys? It was Orange County, California, and Harris County, Texas. I'm going, there's no friggin' way that these guys are making 8 or 9% on treasuries. I mean, they don't pay that much. I mean, because I know about the derivative markets, I'm going, these guys are doing some stuff in the derivative markets. They're obviously selling calls in there, they're doing something, but they're finding a way to do something to basically put the whip to this stuff. And obviously when you do that, and people who do it, whenever it works for a while, what do? You do it bigger and bigger and bigger until finally one day it blows up. But it never blows up when you got a 20 lot out there. It blows up when you got a 200 lot out there, right? I mean, it's just the way the world is. Nobody goes broke with the first $20 golf bet. You go broke because you know so much about sports betting, you got $100,000 going on a weekend, you lose every game, right? I mean, that's what happens to people. So sure enough, those two guys end up almost going to jail, and, we didn't have any idea we were doing any of this stuff. How did you think, you friggin' moron, that you were doing twice as good as anybody else in the country and weren't taking any risk? How could that possibly be? But I'm saying, it was right there on a sheet of paper. Why didn't anybody go, what are these guys doing? They obviously aren't following the rules. As I saw them, investing in treasuries, because the treasury's paying 4%. How the hell are you making 8? Right? I mean, it turns out one day they lost all that dough, put the place in bankruptcy. Wasn't my fault. Okay. Whose fault was it? Anyway, what's going on? Any chance in Northwestern? How do you see this playing out, Kevin? Let's go. Who's winning? Who's going where?
If Purdue can beat Ohio State, so can Northwestern. Will they? Doubt it, but possibly. The key game, the whole thing doesn't get interesting unless Alabama beats Georgia. And Georgia is very capable of beating Alabama. So if Georgia wins, then it's real simple. Georgia, Alabama, Clemson, and Notre Dame are in. Everybody else is out.
There's really not going to be much discussion of it. Right, there's no... amount of thumping, given Alabama's very, very light schedule, there's no amount of thumping Georgia can give Alabama to drive them out of the top four, in your opinion.
I don't think so. I really agree with you,
by the way.
Maybe there is such a number. I just don't know what it is, and I don't envision that happening anyway. So I think you probably start there and say, that's going to decide a whole lot, because, you know, then you'll have those four teams in, and nobody else is going to have much of an argument to the contrary. I guess the only argument would be, well, they were the last ones to lose. Alabama was the last ones to lose, so they're not in Okay. Why does that matter?
Well, the argument for me would be they played three real teams and got thumped by one.
They may have only played two real teams and got thumped
okay,
by one.
Okay, even
and,
better.
And you could, yeah, you could honestly make that case, but I think the opinion of Alabama is higher than the accomplishment of Alabama. And, and that may be justified. It's a really good, really talented team.
By the way,
right.
I haven't a feeling
they haven't played anybody, and yeah. In fact, they have three of incredibly weak games on their schedule, three incredibly weak non-conference games. And then they open against Louisville, who wasn't supposed to be weak, so it's hard to hold that against them, except that Louisville is awful.
Yeah.
Awful enough to have fired its coach.
I agree. Another question, just on a sports angle, from obviously the three of us have played a lot of sports. What, not how the other team can play, but how much easier is it to go to Purdue in the middle of a season when your coach has got illness issues and you're fighting some stuff with sexual assault issues and everything else that was going on with or wife beating issues and Ohio State has always had some political problems on that team. I mean, what are the chances of going to Purdue middle of the season? This was going to be an easy game. Purdue comes out fired up a little, and all of a sudden they, after the first half, they think they can actually win this thing, and oh, by the way, they do. How much more likely is it a team like Ohio State, as talented as they are, to lay an egg like that than it is to lay an egg tomorrow when everybody's pointing for the game and you're all fired up for it, and you know what the carrot at the end of the game is? I don't know that you lay an egg tomorrow.
Is that likely? Yeah, but look at Michigan last week. They laid an egg.
I just think Michigan,
that was clearly a big game.
I think Michigan ran into a better team.
Yeah, but four touchdowns better.
They had no ability to stop their running game. The quarterback's a terrific passer, but then when they started running around the end and he was just outrunning the whole team, I think if they play again tomorrow, he still outruns the whole team. He's just faster.
Yeah, maybe so.
At
any rate, so you have that. Now, let's just say it holds to form and Alabama wins. Now you're looking at what will Ohio State do and what will Oklahoma do. And Oklahoma, I really, every time I've seen them, and frankly, every time I've seen a Big 12 game this year, it looks like they're playing flag football with no flags.
Well, they're not big on defense.
They're not big on defense, awful tackling, just terrible. It's pathetic to watch. On the other hand, Oklahoma's only loss is to Texas, so Oklahoma will get a chance to avenge its only loss playing Texas tomorrow. So they will have that claim that they beat everybody on their schedule. It just happened to split with one of the teams. Ohio State has some issues too. They have some really stinker wins too.
Yeah.
I think they struggle against Nebraska. And I'd have to pull it up, but they struggled against somebody else that's not very good.
Maryland,
that was it. Yeah. So now you're sitting here saying, okay, whose schedule sucks the least of the one loss teams.
Well, I mean, when the Irish played,
nobody has a strong argument, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
I really thought, Kevin, and it's hard to tell once a team gets down. These are 20-year-old kids. I really thought last Saturday when I watched, first 10 minutes I watched of the game, I'm like, I can't believe the talent differential here between these two teams. I mean, how much bigger and faster on the offensive line and on the offensive side of the ball Ohio State was. I mean, it reminded me of when the Irish played Alabama in the national championship game a few years ago. And the Alabama was thumping the Irish in the first half, and Kelly comes off the field. This is before he redeemed himself. But he goes, the attractive girl says, "Is the second half going to be any different?" And he said, "Yeah, only if they don't show up." But it was pretty obvious, they were bigger, faster, stronger. I mean, right? I mean, I'm thinking this Ohio State team is they're the one team in Alabama probably doesn't want to play.
Yeah, I'm trying. I need to think about that one for a minute. I don't know which teams Alabama doesn't want to play. Clemson has beaten them a few times in the playoffs.
Yep.
Have they beaten them twice or just once? I can't remember.
Last year, the year before,
they beat them once for sure. But they've competed with them every time they played them. I mean, Alabama has never rolled Clemson.
Yeah. So Clemson is not going to be the slightest bit afraid going into that game. they'll be going in playing I Know I Can, Not I Think I Can.
Hey, not to jump subjects on you, I don't know if they're winning last night, I dozed, but where did that linebacker come from? Did Vandershow, how good is that guy? Where did he come from? The kid who
Which guy?
The Dallas linebacker. I mean, like, he's leading the league in tackles and everything else. I mean, who is that guy? The white guy from tall, skinny guy reminds me of Doug Buffon. He just tackles everybody. Once he gets his hands on him, the guy's always down. Vander
I didn't watch very much of him of the game last night, so I don't know. I watched the Irish women take Iowa apart.
It's but between him and Rokan Smith,
and I'm going to see him play UConn on Sunday. That'll be an interesting game.
Yeah, cool. No, between him and Rokan Smith, I'm not so sure who's got better linebackers. The Dallas team looks real. Did they end up winning?
They did. They beat the Saints outright, 13-10. Leighton Vander Esch is the guy you're talking about.
Where'd he come from?
I'm not sure. I'll have to find it.
But he's like the announcer's like, oh, the guy's he's leading the league in solo tackles by far. I mean, it's unbelievable.
So Roquan Smith for the Bears is on pace to break the all-time Bears rookie record for tackles in a season, currently held by Urlacher. And Leighton Vander Esch might win Defensive Rookie of the Year, even though Roquan Smith is that good. He is from Riggins, Idaho, and he played at Boise State.
I was talking about the other guy they've got, the Jalen Smith.
Jalen Smith played at Notre Dame.
Those two guys are. And how rigged are the refereeing? Jalen Smith goes over and whacks helmet to helmet on a guy from New Orleans last night.
On Kamara.
Yeah, and everybody, and nobody, there wasn't even a hint of a flag. I mean, how much more does everybody want Jerry Jones back in the playoff hunt here, or what? I mean, something's.
Yeah, there was another one though later in the game before he fumbled, I think, because I did see the end of the game, and they missed a blatant face mask against that, you know, would have given Dallas a first down. I think they wound up getting one anyway, and then turned the ball over, and Drew Brees handed it back to him. But didn't you know, the interesting part of that was we saw the formula now for New Orleans. You know, everybody was thinking, well, they're rolling, they're not going to lose again, and it's pressure up the middle.
Guess which
favorite team of ours is pretty good at pressure up the middle?
Oh, the Bears.
That's right.
Yep.
Well, I mean, when you look back and when you think about it, as good as Drew Brees is, as good as some of these somewhat undersized quarterbacks, I mean, Joel Theismann, even Bart Starr for that regard, the bane of a quarterback that's not 6'6" is pressure up the middle. And the Bears always had that with Dan Hampton, they had it with Wally Chambers, they had it with the Fridge, and when you can make your centers and guard like backpedal, then you got a problem for any quarterback, but really if you're shorter. Is that fair?
Can't step up in the pocket anymore, and then when you throw edge rushers, I can't say that very well.
Yep.
When you throw the guys from the edge at them as well, then there's a problem. They have to unload really, really quickly, and if they can beat you with quick passes, then you're gonna have a long day. But that's really, really hard to do.
I was somewhat shocked in the club the other day as I'm pounding iron, body sculpting, that's a laugh. The number one team gets to pick which city they want to play in? College?
I'm sure they get input, but I don't know that they really get to pick. They're going to go, you know, they're going to conduct business. The committee's going to conduct business. And what I mean by that is they're going to go where people will travel.
Well, but according to my guys, they all hit their cell phones. You got your smartphone with you while you're working out, of course. I mean, I don't, but they all hit the. And I said that can't be right. Well, sure, of course, eight of them proved me wrong in about a second. Yeah, if Alabama's number one, the question was, how are they going to decide whether they're going to Miami or Dallas? And these guys thought the answer was if they're playing Oklahoma, they'll go to Miami because Dallas is too close to Oklahoma, more like a home game for them. And if they're playing somebody else, they're playing Ohio State, they'll probably do it in Dallas.
Yeah, well, they're going to go where they're going to get fans to go, though. So it won't surprise me if Oklahoma winds up in Dallas.
Well,
it just depends on who.
No, but I'm saying Alabama.
I would be kind of surprised because they want to sell out those games.
Manny, why don't you Google that? Because I was stunned too, Kevin, because it makes no sense, but. Every one of them came out with the same answer. The number one team gets to pick the city that they want to play in, which is astounding to me.
I wouldn't be appalled by that, by the way. I, you know, look, being, being number one's got to be worth something to you, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. Which would you pick? Miami's not a dome, right? No.
Correct.
So, I don't know. Would you pick absolutely for sure good weather or possible rain?
Depends on what kind of offense I run.
If you're Alabama, I'm not so sure how I'd make that call, to be honest with you. Which is closer to where Alabama is? It's kind of equidistant, isn't it? Or maybe Miami's probably a little further, but I don't even know.
Yeah, I think Miami's further, and I think it's an easier drive if you want to go to Dallas.
I would think so too. So we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about why we're selling off before these meetings. And right now, we've got the S&P futures are down. They're down 14. We got the Dow down 140. We got the Nasdaq down 32, which I'm kind of surprised about today. I actually thought we'd be up going into this meeting, but I don't know. Maybe all the difference, all the meetings that are canceled is rubbing people the wrong way. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. The Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber, and Kevin O'Neill with us as well. S&P futures now down 1175. We'll get back a little bit. Dow's still down 130. NASDAQ down 30. As everybody is landing in, has already landed in Argentina, except for Merkel, who's landing today because her Airbus 340 conked, Kevin. Or they had some electronics problem. It didn't conk, and, like, fall out of the air or anything like that. It was, the DAX down 83.7%. FTSE down 58.8. CAC around down 26.5. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei actually up 88.4%. Shanghai, which was down a bunch yesterday, is up 20.8%. Hang Seng down, up 55.2%. So they're 2588 and 26,506 on those. And they're maybe a little bit bullish on maybe some kind of a deal this weekend. We will see on that. Well done, 89 cents, 50.56, so not under 50, but giving back some of the rally from the other morning. Brent down 75 cents, 58.76. Natural gas, 456. RBOB, 142. And home heating oil, 182. We've got gold down 290, silver down 8 cents, still up way up from the under 1,200 number it was, but kind of falling apart. The rally is falling apart right about here, it looks like. Manny, what do you got for us? Trevor Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start so far in the area. Expressways, roadways, and tollways. No major issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Traffic building on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Southside expressways are looking nice and quiet. Only issue I'm seeing right now is in the northern burbs. Fairfield Road at Route 176, there's a disabled vehicle. And then at US 12 and Old Rand Road, there's a disabled vehicle as well that folks are having to navigate around. But everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, actually this one just came across, which is not good. In the city, Fullerton at Lincoln Park West, there's a crash. But everything else is okay out there. Weather today, partly cloudy skies with a high of 39. Right now it's mostly clear and 33. For our Phoenix listeners, it cools off a bit. Partly cloudy with a high of just 65. Right now it's mostly clear and 49. In sports, Blackhawks continue to struggle. They're scoring goals, but they can't stop anybody. They lost to the Jets last night 6-5. Coyotes with a nice road win over Nashville 3-0. Thursday night football, as we mentioned earlier, is the Cowboys upsetting the Saints 13-10. Cowboys are in the driver's seat now to win the NFC East. And in college hoops, one game of note, it was Arizona blowing out Georgia Southern 100-70. Chief.
When are we going to have open season on Lyft and Uber drivers when you're driving?
Meaning you get to, like, shoot bow and arrows at them?
Or worse. The police used to...
Hunting season? I think there's a week in February that they get to do that.
You got to have your license, though.
It used to be the police used to love...
Yeah, you have to have a license for it.
Well, the police used to love harassing cab drivers because they were safe to pull over, and I guess they always paid. But have the police been officially told to stand down on Uber because Ram's brother owns a chunk of the company, or what? Just saying, not on a suspicious sort.
What are they doing wrong?
Drive from here to drive home every night instead of taking the L for about 2 weeks, you tell me.
They're no different than cab drivers. Well, actually, all of them are cab drivers.
The difference is when someone...
like 90% of them now are just former cab drivers.
The difference is when it's a cab driver, you know it's a cab and you expect it. So if you're in the right lane and a cab decides he wants to turn right, even though you're not, and pulls in front of you, you're not all that surprised. But if it's a regular car, you are.
Well, if you're behind him, you can at least see the huge Uber or Lyft sticker on the back.
I'm talking about where they...
So you know they're an Uber driver.
They'll swing over four lanes and turn in front of you, even though you're going straight, that kind of thing.
My question to you is, if you say if it's a cab driver, I recognize them, I expect it, but it's an Uber driver, I don't recognize them, well, then how do you know it's an Uber driver?
Because when they
if
get
you don't
that
recognize
close,
them.
When they get that close, I see this stupid little smartphone up on the dash.
Oh, so you do know it's an Uber driver.
Only
so
after,
then you should treat him like cab drivers.
Well, only after he becomes within where I can see him, like that close. Where I don't want him. That's the point.
They do have the huge Uber sticker on the back, but it's not lit up at night, so you can't really see it at
the
night.
Lyft guys, you at least see coming toward you.
They have the pink light or whatever.
Yeah. I think the Lyft guys are actually a little better, but the Uber guys are...
They're the same guy. That's what you're missing.
Well, the interesting
they both part... Drive, they all drive for both.
They also, the people who are in the cars, are we going to try and get, is there some way we can do a citizen IQ test? I've never seen a cab driver. I sit up in the club and I'm on my bike and I look out over the Congress Parkway. It's not an expressway yet, but I've never seen a cab driver stupid enough to pull over on the side of Congress Parkway, which most people treat as still an expressway, and let people out of both sides of the car on the expressway. And yet, the Uber drivers do it every single night. And people get out on the traffic side on the Congress Parkway. How stupid are they? I mean, are we putting something? What they used to put in the food of people in like jails? Saltpeter, was it, Kevin? To stop the testosterone from working or something to make people eunuchs?
I usually refer to stupid gas. There's been a release again.
I mean, would you ever let a cab driver pull over on the Congress Parkway to let your family out of the car? And I see it every night. Just saying. I mean, these are the people that are voting, for God's sake. Whatever.
They shouldn't be allowed to vote, operate heavy machinery.
Anyway, Kevin,
I'm sure we can come up with a list.
I did Google the how they picked the site, and I guess my guys in the club might be right this year because I think Alabama's right in the middle. Generally, the number one team goes to the venue closest to them, but I think Alabama's right in the middle this year. I think in Miami and
Okay, and that's sort of they do something similar with the basketball tournament too. There's always some teams that get shipped out a long way, but for the most part, the highly ranked basketball teams get to play as close to home, and in fact, that's why they created that pod system where you might have in the early rounds of the tournament, you might actually have two teams from different regionals playing in the same place, or multiple teams. You know, that of the where they put eight teams in a region,
yeah,
or is it four? Whatever it is, that half of them are from one part of the bracket, and the other half are from another.
Well, the
So that's not unusual, and there's really nothing wrong with that. They put them closer to home. That could mean Dallas for Alabama then as the number one seed.
Yeah, I don't know where are they in? They're in Tuscaloosa, right?
Yep. It would not surprise me at all if they consulted or if the athletic departments got to weigh in with a preference and that they'll accommodate it if they can. That wouldn't surprise me. But ultimately, they're going to go for what gets them. You know, the TV ratings are going to be what they are.
Well, it's interesting.
Go for what gets them. They'll go where it fills up the stadium.
Well, you know, what's interesting is it is not a NCAA sanctioned event.
I know.
I did not know that. I mean, I know that NCAA makes more of their money clearly in basketball. I mean, they make like 80% of their money in basketball, but I didn't realize that the conferences basically did this on their own and said, you're in or you're out. Are you with us or aren't you?
Well, yeah, this is just sort of an extension of the bowl system, and it's been, it used that construct to conjure up this playoff system.
The look at the people that are on this board. I mean, how do you get on this thing? Joe Castelloni, Oklahoma Athletic Director, I know who the hell he is. Christopher Howard, Robert Morris, President, former Air Force running back. Jeff Bauer, former Southern Miss head coach. Jeff Durometi, former Central Michigan head coach. Ronnie Lott, former Southern California defensive back. He had a pretty pro career, too, didn't he? Bobby Johnson, former Vanderbilt head coach. Scott Strickland, who's the Florida Athletic Director currently. Rob Mullins, Oregon Athletic Director. I mean, how do you get this job? What does it pay? Frank Beamer, former Virginia Tech head coach. Paula Bolden, Arizona Republic reporter. Is that the only lady? Ken Hatfield, former Rice Air Force somebody, and Gene Smith, Ohio State athletic director. So,
yeah, like, so the Ohio State and Oklahoma are both represented.
Yeah, and
if it comes down to them, that'll be interesting. So I'm sure they both have to leave the room.
So is Oregon and Florida athletic directors and Georgia Tech.
That committee used to have Condoleezza Rice on it.
Right.
But I don't think she's allowed to be on there anymore if she's the next head coach of the Cleveland Browns.
The people who used to be on here before Pat Hayden was on there?
But he can't be on there anymore. Well, no, he can. And he's former athletic director. Tyrone Willingham was on there. They tried to put people with a reputation for integrity. That's fine. Selection committee is as good as anything. There's not a lot of great ways to pick a field of four.
Barry Alvarez, Lloyd Carr, Archie Manning. Wow, this is an interesting. Jeff Long, you're right. Tyrone Willingham. It's a. I don't. How come we're not? Where's Lou? Why isn't Lou on one of these things? Nobody wants him.
I don't know. Well, Randy Clampett himself.
Yeah. Where do you think he was yesterday? He refused to divulge his location.
That's a first.
I think he was in the Ukraine. I bet he was over there someplace.
He might have just been in the bathroom.
Possible.
God. It should be very interesting. What do you think? I can't ask Kevin. What do you think the average person even thinks of this G20 meeting? It started out as what, the G7, then they invited a bunch of other people, and then that.
Well, no, they've always had two meetings. They've always had two. You know, so the one is the largest. You know, what was the G8 before Russia got kicked out, and that was the largest economies. But then this G20 is sort of a developed world. I'm surprised they don't have the California governor there. He's got a bigger economy than most of those countries.
Governor Moonbeam,
yep.
How many years has that guy been governor? First and second set. It's got to be.
That would be an interesting question. I don't know the answer, but it seems to me that between his two terms, he has served as governor for a long time.
And you know, it's easy to serve as governor when the companies in your state are growing. When they're not, it's kind of tough. I mean,
it is a challenge, and I don't know how many companies are growing out in California.
They still have masses of people in that whole Silicon Valley area. I mean, they got a huge sort of thing there. Kevin, I was listening to, and I don't want to go into it too much because we have Carl coming in a bit, but I was digging through all my old. This all happened because I was cleaning out my space here, and I'm trying to organize all the articles that I like to have at the tip of my fingers, but can't. And I'm horrible at going on the internet and finding stuff again. Plus, you know, I think they bury economic papers, you know, ones that are organized just the way you want them. Try and go get them again, especially the federal government. They're not really big on putting stuff real easy on one page. Try and find. I cannot do it, and you know, Carl can't either, which is even more bizarre. I can't find a breakdown of the PCE. CPI, you can get it, you know, down to a, you know, how much they think a match went up in price last year. But the PCE, I can't find. And, or at least the unadjusted PCE by line item. And so I don't know where that's a closely guarded secret. But it's, I was digging through some stuff that a lot of the listeners sent me, and I forgot I had, where people have done, studies over a long period of time. One was 1980 to 2001. Another one was like 2001 to 2014, where they looked at various segments and they talk about inflation. Okay, and it's really odd, Kevin, because if you take every quarter or every year, I mean you can argue it. I mean, I think, you know, the person who does the numbers, which I wouldn't want to be, you could argue and say, you know, what did you know, medical care really go up this year? I mean, you could probably have somebody say, well, this insurance rate in this area, maybe they didn't go up at all. Or guess what? This is the first year that the price of the list price of an MRI, which I don't know who pays and who doesn't, only went up 3% as opposed to, you know, 7 or 8% the last 5 years, or whatever the numbers are. You can have this argument on every spot on the page. And you need to
break it down, because in many cases the cost of the service itself hasn't gone up at all.
Right.
But the cost of insurance to get the service, which pays for the service, has gone up. So you have to deal with that. So when you know, a lot of times when you see the healthcare numbers, prescriptions may be a different line item and have a different impact, but when you see the numbers, they'll say, well, the cost of healthcare hasn't gone up very much. And everybody looks and says, well, the cost of my insurance has gone up a lot, so as far as I'm concerned, the cost of healthcare is up.
But just, I went through it, and without, I mean, I think everybody by now knows my opinion that these numbers are all bleeped up. But when you look through it, Kevin, there's reasons why they're sort of bleeped up, and they're mathematical. Because suppose you had a, you know, the cost of, I don't know, what ridiculous thing would it be? The cost of toothpaste, say. And it's, you know, 0.1% of the cost of the basket. I'm just making numbers up. And all of a sudden, next year, for some reason, somebody buys every toothpaste manufacturer on Earth, and there's only one, and the price of a tube of toothpaste goes from $3 to $20. Okay, I mean, I'm just, you know, being crazy here.
Yeah, I get you.
And all of a sudden, now, everybody sits there and goes, what the hell? Our family goes through, you know, 20 tubes of toothpaste a year. That's, you know, $500. It used to be whatever. And it's a huge deal. So now next year, if you do it properly, okay, and I'm not so sure these guys even do, but if you did, now the toothpaste, instead of being 0.1% of your CPI, where you barely registered, right, even though it went up by 100% or by 1,000%, the next year now maybe it's 1%, because now it's an awful lot more money if you made the adjustment. But now the next year, if it doesn't go up, it's actually a drag on the inflation number. But you never pick up the 1 or 2 or 3 year jump, even if you're being legit. Okay, you never pick that number up. In other words, let's take one more and keep, say for instance these guys were straight, which again I think they're not, and medical care is 6% of the economy, and all of a sudden 1 year something happens, Obamacare, Reagan care, you know, whatever, whoever care it happens to be, Kevin O'Neill care, something screws up in the system, and your insurance goes from $400 a month to $2,000, and it's 6%. Now if you and I did the math properly, next year, it's now going to be 12% of your basket, which these guys, by the way, haven't made an adjustment. But if they did, and it's now 12%, well, now the next year, because now there's hue and cry from how much these guys raped us last year, for the next 3 years, let's say the numbers stay even. So now it's zero. You never pick up the outlier. So when you go back and look at the numbers.
Let me throw out a potential different way to look at this. Because the reason we use the market basket is because we've always used the market basket, and the reason we've always done it is because we didn't have big data once upon a time. And as a result, you needed a way to do a statistical sample without having to gather every last ounce of data, because that was too cumbersome. Now we have, you know, gigantic databases, and we have the ability to do this. Wouldn't it be a better idea to say, here's the cost of having a family of four?
That's what the
overall, all right. In, it doesn't matter what the line items are, that if you just all in, you measure it from that standpoint. And so the toothpaste is in there regardless of whether it's a little or a lot, but so's everything else.
Well, I think they think they are, but you have to put a weighting on it of some kind.
No, but I'm saying, no, you don't. You just say, an average family of four spends, goes through 20 tubes of toothpaste and 16 of these and 17 of these and, 150 of that, or, you just sort of figure that out and then say, all in, what's that cost you? And what did it cost for that last year, and what does it cost for that this year?
Okay, but how do you, that's fine. I'm saying, I mean, I'm not trying to make this into a math debate, but my point is they're so screwed up, even if you did it straight, is what I'm saying is you never, that's why, Kevin, if you look at a 15-year thing, you're going to come up with a much different number. There could conceivably, because you might say, holy bleep, the CPI is up 340% since 1970. Yet the cost of a Notre Dame education is up 5,000%. Or the cost of medical care is up 3,000%. It's because you never pick back up the jump year, is what I'm saying. You know?
Yeah, okay, yeah. So, yes, it would be nice to say, here's your year-over-year inflation number, here is your 10-year inflation number, here's your 20-year. I get what you're saying. And I think that's absolutely valid. But I would also add that the idea of having a basket of goods is in this day of gigantic databases and the ability to crunch the numbers. There's no need to have a sample basket anymore because the sample basket's going to change over time anyway. All you need to do is say, what does it cost me to be a family of X?
Yeah, but you run the risk
is obtainable now.
But you run the risk if you do that. It's a challenge. You want to keep it. You want to be able to compare 2018 to 2005 as best you can. So you do have a basket, but you also know what people do change. And there was a move before that David always talks about is when you adjust based on the prices going up, which is an attempt at what you're saying, Kevin, is where, for instance, if the price of beef doubles, there's some attempt to say, well, when that happens, if pork's the same price, the average family is now going to use less beef and more pork, which there's a logic too. But I'm saying that these numbers, is even if it was straight, it would be hard to do. But it's also real easy. The perfect example is when I asked Hal Snar, and typical, he doesn't live in Chicago. I said, Hal, what if, for instance, you got a house, right? Yeah, you can park in front of your house. Yep. I said, what if the rate tomorrow to park in front of your house all of a sudden is $500 a year? Which it isn't in Chicago, but say it's 150, which it is, or something like that. Manny, what's our parking sticker? It's
$85 a year. 80? And then if you have, if you need a permit too, that's another like 20 or whatever.
Okay, so whatever the, say it's obscene. Say it's $100 to park in front of your house.
That's basically where we're at.
Well, you don't, it was nothing, now all of a sudden it's 100. Well, it was never on in the basket before. So the next year, if it becomes 2% of your, which it wouldn't be at $100, say it's 1% of your stuff, well, now it doesn't change for 10 years. It actually is a drag, when in effect, it's actually up 100% from nowhere, right?
So, yeah, and what I'm telling you is that can just go into the cost of being, you know, of being, of existing, basically.
Well, that's what we're trying to say here.
And there's no need to you know, decide when it was and when it wasn't in the basket. It's just that your cost of living is now up.
And if you ever did something like that, Kevin, you'd be appalled. You'd be absolutely appalled at those numbers compared to what they were.
Hey, I want to get something in real quickly because we only have a couple of minutes.
Yep.
And that is, and I'm sure the listeners have heard this as a report that the Chinese scientist says he's created genetically modified babies using, the gene genetics techniques.
Kevin, don't we have something like that? That if they see something and those ultrasounds and stuff, there's a couple of things that they can do now while the baby's still in the womb, to like almost vaccinate against some of these diseases, these genetically born diseases. Don't we have a little?
Yeah, I don't know how that works, and I'm certainly not expert in this field. But what I do want to say is that there's medical research now that is making a lot of progress using genetics. In fact, there'll be products on the market that deal with Alzheimer's and that deal with cancer and others, where you can do a genetic modification, and your lack of ability to fight the disease before will no longer be a lack of ability to fight the disease.
Well, that'd be beautiful if it was that breast cancer gene.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
when you do this with people in childbearing age, then the modified genetics now become part of, you know, get passed from generation to generation. And that's the frightening part, because we don't know yet what's going to happen. You know, are you going to create new, are there going to be new diseases that you no longer can fight?
How do you only
as a result of a genetic modification, are we opening ourselves up? So if you're a 50-year-old cancer patient and you're not going to produce children anymore, that's one thing. If you are an unborn child who is going to live an entire life, then you are going to start passing the genetic modifications into the population. This is why that's considered unethical in the medical profession. It is not a good thing to have happening here.
How do you know that you're not going to affect the mother? How do you affect just the baby? That's probably an easy question for somebody knows what they're talking about, but I don't know.
Yeah, this would be a really good question. We got to find a guest who can talk about this.
Well, I know what's happened. You've seen Star Trek. You turn out with Khan. Wasn't
it
Khan?
Could be, but you get the idea. I think that it's significant news, but it's significant news because this is a development that should concern us, I believe.
Well, I have a great answer for you. You turn out with Ricardo Montalban. Khan. On Star Trek.
Yep.
Kevin, that is a good point.
No, well, that's Fernando. I was going to say, you look marvelous.
Yeah, you... Take care of yourself, buddy. We'll talk next week about what happened this week at SP Futures down 13.75. We'll be back with Mr. Carl Denninger. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. It's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happened.
Well, everybody, it's Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Carl Denninger. SP Futures now down 1175, down on 128, NASDAQ down 28. So we're down a little bit as the G20 starts down in Argentina. Carl, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Everybody, so the president, everybody's flying right over you on the way to Argentina.
Well, no, I'm actually up north right now, but that's all right.
All right. I saw you were still in Florida.
Not in Florida right now.
All right. Well, if you're in Chicago, you came up for the bad weather, although it's going to rain all weekend. At least we get rid of the snow.
Well, you know, I don't like that white stuff. That's why I live in Florida, but anyway.
When you like the white stuff, when you go skiing, you want to go to the white stuff. There they have it. You can ski for a while and you leave it, right?
Exactly. That's the idea.
Yes, that is the idea. Hey, a lot of stuff going on, a lot of crazy stuff, and I kind of thought with this episode with General Motors doing what they're doing, and then we had a gentleman from the AFL-CIO on, and, you know, when you say bad stuff about people, you don't really want to be proven right, but I was always talking about the idea was when the corporate rate was 35%, that if you just got it down to a fair rate, say 20-25%, all these corporate guys would be right with it, and they'd be cool, and it wouldn't be, you know, it'd be competitive with Zimbabwe and other places. And my point the whole way was, these people, all they care about is advantage. And if we got it down to 8%, they'd still find a place where they only had to pay 2. So anyway, the gentleman from the AFL-CIO came on and said, the new tax law actually makes it more advantageous for somebody to be overseas than the old tax law. And I said, well, there's only one person I know who knows about that stuff. But what to me, Carl, is you know, again, I'm asking you, the new plants, like if General Motors wanted to build a plant in Alabama or someplace that's a right-to-work state, I'm going to say they can probably get away with labor under $20 an hour or $20 an hour somewhere in there. Probably aren't going to pay much. I think that they can somehow weasel out of some of the pension stuff the old people had. You might even be able to put them in a form. I mean, I don't know. But I'm saying we're down to 30 hours a car. So even if Mexico is 5 hours and these guys are 25, you're talking about $600 on a car that averages 31,000 hours. And, oh, by the way, there has to be some cost of getting stuff back and forth to Mexico that you wouldn't have in going to Alabama. I'm not sure of the numbers here. I mean, I'm curious, is there something I'm missing? I mean, there or not. I mean, so I'm thinking, who knows more about this than me? And the answer was Carol. So what am I missing here? I mean, there's got to be something that I'm leaving out.
Well, yeah. So the cost of labor is not entirely just the wage. As anybody that's run a business knows, it's all of the compliance and tax-related things that go along with it. So, you know, you say, well, you know, the pay is, you know, it's $24 an hour here, and it's, you know, $4 an hour in Mexico. But there's no FICA in Mexico. There's no Medicare tax in Mexico. Remember that half of those, even though they're paid by the employee because you get a lower offered wage, don't show up there on your W-2. They don't show up on your pay stub. And in fact, it's illegal for an employer to put them on your pay stub. So that's just the start of it, because then you have the OSHA requirements, you have all of the other regulatory things that go on, all of which are real costs and all of which don't exist south of the border. And so the real number is nowhere near, you know, what it's portrayed as. It's actually much larger. But the real problem with what they did with the tax cuts, and one of the things I yelled about at the time, is that there was a lot of noise being made about the repatriation thing, and the fact that you know, essentially firms had been jurisdiction shopping in terms of where they assign intellectual property and things like this in order to essentially offshore money. And then once you've done that, then you've got a problem because, you know, now the cash is over there. How do I get a home without paying tax on it, right? So there was a one-time tax holiday that was part of this act. And the problem with one-time tax holidays is the same problem you have with one-time amnesty with illegal immigration, which is that nobody really believes it's one time.
It's like the 30% off of Duluth trading around Christmas time. It'll come back.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially, you know, when you look at what happened with illegal immigrants, when we basically said, okay, all the ones who are here can stay, but there won't be any more. Okay, and that's happened twice throughout history, well, relatively recent history, you know, back in Reagan and Clinton time frames. And the premise was this was going to be completely fixed with E-Verify and there wasn't going to be any more of this nonsense. Well, what ended up happening, of course, is that there was lots more of it, and the people that wanted to come to the United States and didn't care about the law, didn't care about the rules, did it because they believed that they would be exempted somewhere in the future. Now, it doesn't matter whether it's true or not, the economic impact still happens. So you got the same thing that goes on with these kinds of tax amnesties, and when you start writing tax bills that have these kinds of provisions in them, what you're essentially doing is saying, okay, guys, structure your businesses in such a way as to put everything you can where it's the cheapest, because the government will find some way to forgive you for doing it later on and allow you to use those funds somewhere else.
Carol, from if you're from the University of Chicago school, and I know a lot of what those guys thought didn't turn out to be true, but if you're from that school, you would say that stuff like OSHA is government following where society's going anyway, not really leading. Now, again, it's that. So in other words, there wouldn't be all that, in Milton Friedman's mind, there wouldn't be much difference between a state that had a bunch of OSHA rules and states that didn't by looking at the factory. In other words, but you might have to have five people on staff just to play with the five idiots motion that are there doing God knows what on a daily basis. The playing back and forth with the bureaucrats part, I'm sure they would agree with us that, yeah, that's something you don't want to have to do. But I've never been in a plant someplace other than here, but say the OSHA rules in Canada aren't the same. It's not like you're going to walk into a pickup plant up there and find dangerous crap all over the place. I mean, if there's any kind of a legal system where somebody gets an arm lopped off by something, a safety thing that should have been there, you can still sue, right? I mean, you probably can't sue as easily in Mexico, but I guess my question is, how much different does a plant look here versus Canada or Mexico? I'm going to guess Canada, not much. Mexico, I mean, does the thing look dangerous? I mean, are guys getting, you know, hurt by the minute and being carried out, never be seen or heard from again? I mean, or is it just the cost of messing back and forth with the government people, which is a big cost, by the way, because we have in our business?
Yeah, well, it's some of both. You know, Canada is not very different than the United States, but Mexico is a different story entirely. And you got to remember that it's not just things like OSHA compliance. It's when products are made, when assembly lines and things like that are put together and all of those pieces are put together, what's the cost of all of that stuff and where does it come from? Okay, because if all that manufacturing for those things that go into that factory is also done by labor that costs $4 an hour, now the cost of assembling and maintaining the factory is much lower. It's not just the labor to build the car.
Right.
And that's part of the problem that you run into with these so-called free trade agreements, is that this is one of the things that went terribly wrong with NAFTA. We were promised, we were told, that within a few years that Mexican labor costs would be essentially identical to the United States. It never happened. This was what we were told was going to occur, that this was the way the market was going to work it out, and this was the way that the deal was structured. That was a complete and utter lie.
Okay, well,
and now we've got this new deal that was just signed this morning, okay, that has the same sort of promises in it, that wages are supposed to go up to, some percentages up to like $18 within some period of time like that. But the problem is there's no compliance. There's no, yeah. Or else. Or by the way, if it doesn't, there's going to be a $400 tariff per vehicle.
Well, I guess let's take it the other way. If you were to look at China, the Milton Friedmans of the world, who were part of all this theory that arguably has not worked. If you look at China, you can say, well, you're going into a totalitarian regime, essentially, that wants the business. And by the way, there are a bunch of crooks that are in government, which I believe they are. And somebody's getting paid. I mean, the cost of labor, you have to include the cost of payoff and graft to the people who keep
right.
the labor. Now, but I mean, what Milton Friedman's response would have been, since I had clashed with the guy a couple times, would have been, if you bring economic freedom to a place, political freedom follows, which was categorically wrong. I mean, that was his theory. And by the way, China's still a dictatorship years and years later. Where does Mexico? I mean, I don't know. I've never been down. Where does that part? I get the China situation. I know where the money's going. It's going to all the people that are moving over here with $1 million cash, right? They used to be the son of the Zhang Hao administrator or something. That part I get. Why isn't it happening in Mexico? Is it the government's not strong enough to keep the thieves out of the way? I mean, who are you paying off in Mexico? I know who you're paying off in China. I just have a pretty good feeling. But how in Mexico have you managed to keep the price $4 an hour? I mean, I've never been down there. What's unique to that place? Just too many.
Well, you got a lot of people. You got a lot of people that want jobs, and the alternative is $2. So $4 doesn't sound so bad. I mean, this is the general problem with trying to do this kind of thing in different societies, and trying to say, well, you know, we'll just open the border, and what will end up happening inevitably is that people's standard of living will start to go up. They'll aspire to have more. If they don't get more from their employers, they will strike. And as a result, the wages will be forced higher and standard of livings will be forced higher. The real world doesn't work that way. In the real world, what ends up happening is you've got 100 million people and you have 50 million jobs. And so, so guess what? The supply and demand says that the price of that labor falls, doesn't rise. And then, you say, well, you know, we've got to have all of these compliance things to keep everybody safe. And then, well, no, you don't. Well, why not? Because if Joe gets his arm cut off, Jose over here has two arms and he's happy to take the position. So, this is something that happens in the real world. And the idea that somehow this so-called rising tide lifts all boats, which is kind of the Friedmanite belief from the Chicago School, is only true to a certain extent, and it's only true in a market where you have freedom across all areas. But that's just not the case in the real world. And the bigger issue that you run into is that when you have people that are basically peasants. And the same thing is true in China. You take all of these people over there who literally were tending rice paddies. The ability to force that labor into a factory by destroying where they were going before and how they were earning a living, meager though it was, is very real. And it doesn't take much in the way of government interference to make that happen.
Well, but you see that here. It's only when, if you've got, like you say, 100 people out of work and you give 10 of them a job, to give 5 more a job, you probably don't have to pay more. But every time you go for another 5, the idea is it gets a little more. To get the next guy off the sofa, you got to pay a little more because maybe he says, "I'm not working for 5; I need $5.50." So it shouldn't be much of a step function, but it's turned out that way. But how do you negate, Colonel? How do you ship that pickup truck from God knows the middle of Mexico to the dealership on 95th Street? It's got to be $1,200. If you're shipping the engine down there from Michigan, it's got to be $600. If the executive wants to go down and see the place, or if an engineer finds out there's a problem in the plant and has to go down, or a problem with the truck and has to go down and do a work fix, how do you? We're talking about places with no airports. How the hell do you even get the? I mean, the cost of being there has to be dramatic on the overhead side. Isn't it? I mean, to me, that's what I'm getting to. Even though I know you're absolutely right on the labor, I'm not picking up all the pieces, and obviously you're not giving people vacations down there. I get that part. The $25-$30 an hour is really not the number. It's probably 50 or 60. But all these other things are dramatic. How the hell, I mean, we're talking about Boeing moved from Seattle to Chicago. because it was too expensive to fly around the world from Seattle. It was much cheaper from O'Hare. Yeah, you know, or that was at least a big piece of the puzzle. How the hell do you get back and forth from the middle of Mexico? If you have your people that are the accounting people, and how many trips do you think they make down there a year from up here? It's got to be 100, 200, 500. I mean, these other costs got to be huge, I think. I mean, or where am I wrong there?
Well, they are, but the number of people involved is much smaller. I mean, it's, you know, you look at how many of those guys come into the plant versus how many dudes are standing around the floor putting cars together. Okay, it's just it's just a numbers game. It's like the old thing you hear from the left all the time, which is that, you know, the CEO of this company makes this many millions of dollars a year, and that's so unfair. We ought to give it to the workers. You know, you heard this with Walmart, right?
Yeah.
And you actually take the entire wage that the CEO gets and you divide it, you know, associates they have on the floor that are manning cash registers and stocking shelves, and the guy gets a 25-cent an hour raise. I mean, come on. But that's just the way it works out, and it's math. It's not, you know, it's not that you want to be mean, but when you actually corner these people and say, okay, this is where the numbers really come down, this is where the rubber hits the road, all of a sudden you get stony silence because they know you're right, and there just isn't anything you can do about it. But this is the kind of thing, though, that when we get these phony baloney deals, okay, you know, this USMCA thing that's, you know, signed this morning while we were all sleeping, they were doing this.
Yep.
It's not going to solve the problem. And we have got to stop playing this game in America, because as a nation, it is not just a function of where stuff is made, and do you want to be nice to the Chinese, or do you want to be nice to the Mexicans, or, you know, whatever have you. It's that, if we're going to actually have, other than people that, you know, that are sitting in trading desks, or people that are super coders, and not even so much that, because now the coding's all being offshored, and then you're going to have people that pull coffee at Starbucks. If those are going to be the two classes of people in America, we can't pay for any of the government programs we want.
No, I agree.
And so that's, and see, that's the thing, is that people say, well, you know, look at the true number on the deficit, okay? And by the way, if we don't break the medical monopolies, which is a huge part of the cost structure that goes into these corporations and their decisions on where to put labor, if we do not do that, according to the Medicare and Medicaid trustees, 2024, Medicare runs out of money. Now, the nut on this, what everybody has to understand, is that last year, about $250 billion was taken in taxes for that program, right? That's because it's, you know, 2.9%, right?
Yep.
Last year, they paid out $1.1 trillion, which means they will be short 75%. Well, we can pay 80% of all benefits. No. They can pay one quarter of the benefits. And they don't have any other money. You got to realize that Social Security taxes at four times the rate, but pays out a little bit less than Medicare does. It pays that taxes at one quarter the price. If we do not solve this problem, and you can't do it with a tax increase because it's gone on for too long, and too many people paid into it for 30 years without having to pay what it costs, the only way to fix it is to drive the costs down, and you need to drive them down 75% to 80%, or this is going to blow up. GM is doing this to a large degree because of that problem, and so is everybody else. We have to fix it.
I agree totally. I don't know how you. I mean, I'm enough of a free market guy that the last thing I want to do is have government people telling other people how much money they're supposed to make. Okay, but I also know, Carl, in my heart of hearts, that I could go into the top 1,000 people at Humana or Aetna or Commonwealth Edison, or to a certain extent probably even United Airlines, and other, anybody else who's got basically their nose up the ass of government, and I could probably put out what do you call it when you put out a job description for a chairman who's making $20 million a year, want a chairman to make $7 million a year, and I'd probably get resumes from 1,000 people better than the guy I've got. So, I mean, it becomes, I don't know how you do that. I mean, I'll bet you could go into Commonwealth Edison tomorrow and the top 1,000 people, you cut their pay by half and that one guy would leave. Because where else would he go? And get
well,
half
but see, remember, too, that again doesn't fix your issue.
No, but
because the number of people is just too small.
But it's all about you're talking about an industry, and I did. I'm not saying I did more than you, but this was my other Neconomics, which I loved. Cost accounting was my big thing. I mean, don't even does that anymore. But I'm going to say right. I'm going to say that if you're into these industries where they're better off maximizing costs than minimizing them because they can just go get more and more money from the people on the other end. There's a different you and I. If PTI Securities, if I can cut costs by 20%, I raise profit by 20%. Or
right.
generally, or not profit, because hopefully there's a difference between how much we're taking in and we're spending. But if I'm Commonwealth Edison, if I raise costs, those guys are essentially cost plus. So the more I raise the cost, the more I make.
No, it's yeah. worse than that.
Yeah, it's worse than
okay.
that.
Okay. Insurance firms, remember that insurance is a regulated business.
That's what I'm saying.
Typically
yeah.
allowed to make about 10%. The only way for an insurance company to make more money is to pay more claims,
right.
which means the price of whatever it is that it's insuring has to go up.
Well, the guy who just left, well, what was the place that got taken over? And the guy got a 500, was it 550 going away present because he lost control or something? That's going to go on the list and say, well, this is what it costs to have a CEO. By the way, our cost just went up by 550. We need to raise the rates. I mean, that
right.
that for a guy sitting there at a bar drinking a beer, that's obscene. Isn't it? But that's the way it works.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, but you know, it's what you always hear from from all of these whether it be car insurance companies or medical insurance companies, whatever have you, is woe is me, and we need we are working to hold down the expenses and the cost. No, they're not.
No,
the only way they make more money is if it costs instead of $400 to fix your car, if it costs $1,000 to fix your car.
But it's. The issue is when you and I were tykes, there might have been when Milton Friedman was talking about this kind of stuff and guys like him, there might have been. Well, the railroads weren't even really a monopoly; there were more of them, but your monopolies were your utilities always were.
Right,
but your healthcare wasn't. There were probably 200 and some insurance companies doing healthcare. There were all kinds of hospitals. Now the care, from a neighborhood hospital, how good it was. There were some quality issues there. But the idea, now, every year we make more monopolies. I mean, right now, in our lifetime, if this Sprint Mobile deal goes through, there's no way on earth that the federal government can't get involved in doing something with prices on your cell phones. Because now it's become the new landline. AT&T, we've let them make the landline no longer a competitor, even if it ever really was, but say it was. Now we've let a new monopoly be created here. How do we not, if all three of these guys decide to double rates next year, how does somebody in the federal government say, wait a minute, we just gave three people the entire operation for doing everybody's phone bill, read baby bells and whatever, and we're going to let them, charge $50 a month or $100 a month when we know it's costing them one? It's like the railroad. We put one railroad in and back in the 1860s, and he said to the farmer, how much you ship my corn, and he says, how much you got, right? You give somebody a monopoly, it implies that you're going to have to do something somewhere along the line because people are people. But the more of these you make, the bigger the government has to get, and the more screwed up the bureaucracy is, and they never do a very good job, and yet we're going the wrong way. We're making more instead of getting rid of them, I think. I mean, I can name five of them in the last 10 years we've essentially made. Milton Friedman used to have to think a while. He would always talk about his kind of monopolies were something you wouldn't even think about today. It would be the amount of doctors controlling med schools, the amount of med schools there were. The AMA basically controlled the med, so that was the way they controlled the supply and manipulated the price. They're nowhere near as powerful as now, Verizon, AT&T, and whoever it is the third guys are going to be. I mean, how much
right.
more powerful? We're not even on the same planet in terms of power. Do you think the guy from Verizon walks in the morning with ideas on how to cut his price to get business from AT&T? No. How do the three of us share an ever growing marketplace? Right. The operative word being
right.
share. But do we have anybody in office that even knows that this is where we're heading? They keep stuffing money in those guys' pockets. We're gonna be left with four hospitals in Chicago, Carl. Basically,
I know, and you know what? But you know what? Here's the thing. When you get down to it, you know where this started from? I remember this from when I was a kid, okay? If you went to the doctor or you went to the hospital, you got a bill.
Yeah.
And you knew what it was before, you know, before things happened, right? And then you submitted it to the insurance company, and if it was valid, you got a check back from them, right?
Yeah.
That's how this all worked, okay? Now, you never see any of this, well, right? I'm still dealing with stuff with my late mother's estate. You know, you got this thing from Medicare that comes back, you know, explanation of benefits, all right? Because she had one of those Advantage plans, right?
Yep.
And it's like, okay, how much was actually billed on this? Well, I don't know, but, you know, the piece of it that you had to pay was, you know, $63.24. Well, that's nice. How much did the actual service cost?
Did you happen to, sort of changing topics, not because that one wasn't interesting, it is, but you have to catch this guy from, I'll try and pronounce this, Al Milam on the TV yesterday? He's the CEO.
No.
Anyway, they came out with some drug that evidently affects, I don't know how many thousand people in the country, but it's a, what do you call the diseases that are rare, not a whole lot of people.
Oh, the orphan stuff?
Yeah. So they came out with this drug, and evidently, you know, pick a number, how many people have a disease, but it's a cure, evidently. And they want $460,000 a patient. And you know what? Me being the cost accountant that I am, would say, okay, now, does this mean this has to come from the male sperm of a whale up the Amazon, of a fish up the Amazon that costs you, you know, $20,000 per fish to get because there's nobody will go down there because there's, you know, whatever those things that rip you limb from limb. Well, nowhere in the interview with this guy. The whole thing is, if you listen to him, Carl, you'd have been shooting the TV. He talks about, well, it was billions and billions of dollars to research. Okay, give me a list of all that. Prove that to me. Nobody said that. But billions and billions. Right. Why not trillions and trillions? And he says, plus, we looked out at how much it takes to take care of one of these people through a lifetime. So 460 is a real number because of the cost of society. They never said, oh, no, right now, today, what does it cost you to make a shot? How many shots is it
right
here? But that never comes up, and they'll never tell you. And then he says, well, then just what you were talking about is like he was listening to you. Well, it's not like these people are paying. It's whether the insurance company pays, and if one person doesn't have insurance, we'll cut that cost way down for them, which is the new trick. Okay, if Carl can't afford it, we'll give it to Carl for $5,000 and take it off as a charitable expense or something. But our list price is $460, and by the way, that's what every insurance company's paying. I mean, this thing is so screwed up, Carl. I mean, in terms of
you got to understand something. That's not screwed up. That's illegal.
Both. Okay? Yeah.
You got to remember this. Okay, Robinson Patman, which is part of antitrust law, says that it is against the law, it is a felony, to charge different people a different price for like kind and quantity if it's a product. Doesn't apply to services, unfortunately. If it's a product and it travels in interstate commerce.
Right.
Now, I successfully used this law when I had suppliers playing games with me when I was running my internet company and got them to cut that crap out. Okay, but how come nobody goes after anybody on that? Because you know what? Here's the thing. You know what they say is that, well, but insurance companies are basically group buying these things, right? This is what their argument is,
which is all BS.
They ran that argument all the way to the Supreme Court in the 1970s, 1980s, twice, and lost both times. They said they were exempt under McCarran-Ferguson. They lost both cases.
But, Carl, it's so ingrained.
But nobody has been prosecuted, and that's why this goes on.
But, Carl, it's so ingrained in our psyche now. If you go sit down at Notre Dame or at Vanderbilt or even probably a state school, but pick a place, Michigan, and you sit down, and my name's Carl Denninger, and my kid's coming to school here. By the way, what is tuition? What are we going to do about tuition? The first question is, how much you got? If you got it, here's $70,000 is the list price. If you don't have it, it might be $50, it might be $40, it might be $30. Okay, well, that's just a screwed up. The college has no business being in the giving the money part. They should provide an education competitively at a certain price. And if you and I want to go get a loan or somebody help us out, that should be charities. It should be the bank. They shouldn't be all those things. But we don't even know that now. We're so used to getting the loan. Try talking to, we only got a minute here. Try talking to a friend of yours, especially a young friend, when they go buy a car and they get the loan from the dealership, and you say, well, did you go to a bank? Why would I do that? Well, because it's sort of competitive. Right. I mean, if there's a rebate involved with the 1% financing, you should be able to take somewhere else and shop the loan. They think you have two heads, Carl, or you're like really old or something. They have no idea what I'm talking about when I say that. I mean, literally none.
No, I know, and the thing is, we've gotten so far away from the idea. You know, people talk about price discovery and capitalism, but you can only have it if there's price discovery. You only have price discovery if there's a price.
That's right.
And as soon as you start hiding that, then all of this nonsense from the Friedmanites just goes in the toilet.
Well, I know, Carl. Thank you very much, buddy. Have a great weekend. And who do you like tomorrow in college football?
Oh, you know what? As long as it's a good game, I really don't have any particular favorites.
All right, bud. Take care of yourself. SP Futures now only down 6, now only down 73. We've come back at least halfway. And NASDAQ down 11. We've come back two-thirds of the way. Right back, Mr. John Neal. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, my friend, Stockton Jackson. I'm Tom Howe, Mr. Matt Weber, and before we have Mr. John Neal in a second. Now, S&P only down 6, Dow down 74, NASDAQ down 11. We're kind of bouncing all over here, but actually the Dow's down 81 now, so we were down not as much. Now we're coming back down a little bit more, but we've been down with basically half as much as we were earlier. Over in Europe, we've got some guy named Lighthizer, whoever the hell he is, came out and said he predicts the dinner is going to be a success. Trump and Zena, how anybody, Manny, how would you or I know, how would anybody know whether the dinner is going to be a success? I suspect that they will come out and say it was a success.
I don't even know the definition of a successful dinner.
That's exactly right. That's where the beauty of it is.
Does that mean like no one like belched or something?
it's like saying, you know, you may have, you know, sex with some lady and you considered a complete success and she thought you were a drag.
Right. How was it? I think it was a success.
She might say, fine, but don't ever come back.
Right, that's not what she's telling her girlfriend.
That's like, this guy was terrible, for God's sake. No, they would never talk about something like that, would they?
No, of course not.
Dax down 43.4%, FTSE down 35.5%, CAC around down 6.1%. We're in Asia. We got Nikkei up 88.4%, Shanghai up 20.8%, Hang Seng up 55.2%. So, over the Asia, they're moderately optimistic here. We got oil down 78 cents, 50.67. So, about half of the rally from the under 50 number is now gone. Brent down 76 cents. That spread is down to $8.07. Natural gas 4.58. RBOB 143. Home heating oil 182. We've got gold down $4 now. Silver down 10 cents. It's like, don't even bother asking your girlfriend if her friends know about your sex life. They already know. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start on a Friday morning on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. We're accident-free on the Edens and Kennedy. Same with the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways have been relatively quiet all morning. Do have an issue on Lakeshore Drive south just before Grand Avenue. We have a stalled vehicle that's blocking the right turn lane, and that's causing a bit of a delay on Lakeshore Drive, but nothing crazy there. But everything else is looking good from an accident perspective. Off the expressways, we have a couple of issues. In the Western Burbs, Maple Avenue at East Lake Drive out near Naperville, there's a crash. And then there's an accident with injuries on Rand Road at Wilkie Road in the northwestern suburbs. Five people injured, a pretty significant crash that happened about a half an hour ago, and crews are on the scene there. Also downtown, this was a big issue yesterday. It actually closed the Washington and Wells train stop during evening rush hour. The falling ice downtown is a big deal the last 2 days. They've had to close several streets and blocks because huge chunks of ice are falling, you know, 50-plus stories. Around the Sears Tower, or Willis, whatever they call it now, it's like a three-block radius around it is closed, where you can't even walk. All kinds of closures because of that, so keep affecting the sidewalks. So keep that in mind as you're walking around downtown. Weather today, lots of sunshine today. We mild temperatures, too, compared to what we have been. Still below normal, of course, but partly cloudy skies, a high of 39. Right now, it's mostly sunny and 34 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, it cools off just a bit, partly cloudy with a high of 65 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 50. In sports, Blackhawks continue to struggle. They lost to the Jets 6-5. Coyotes shut out the Predators 3-0. Thursday night football is the Cowboys upsetting the Saints at home 13-10. Arizona Wildcats basketball blew out Georgia Southern 100-70. And we didn't talk about this earlier. The Cubs traded Tommy La Stella to the Angels for a player to be named later and cash. So their 40-man roster currently sits at 39. Chief.
The dreaded player to be named later.
Yes.
John, how are you?
I'm doing good. I was listening there. You're talking about Mr. Was it Lightning Rod or Lighthouse?
Yeah.
Talking about the dinner and all that, and I think you're wrong about that. What it is I think he probably saw what was on the menu for the dinner and it's mischaracterized. You know, so he's seen it as a pretty exciting menu, and he's making his prediction that way.
A successful lobster tail option.
Yes.
Right.
Would constitute a successful dinner.
He just saw the dinner menu. You know, that's what he's reporting on, Tom.
Maddie, is Marriott one of your accounts? 500 million consumer accounts hacked?
They're not one of my accounts, but they should be. We do have one of the other huge hotel chains, though. Actually, notice you don't hear about them in the news because they're protected.
Actually, this came through their Starwood wing, according to this article I'm reading.
Interesting.
That they, because Marriott owns Starwood, right? I believe
so, yeah.
So Jan, the kind of interesting to play the last few days, especially with the interest rates coming back toward 3% with the Fed,
right.
The Fed meeting and a big huge up day, and now we're kind of leaking down from that. But you know, we leaked a little bit yesterday, but not very much, after a 600-point up day. It's kind of interesting to trade. We're seeing a little bit of a rally, 2-day rally in the oil, which probably will stop today. since it went the other way. But it's kind of tough balancing these commodities and in the politics with the Saudis. And, you know, the Saudis really want to keep, somehow or another, this guy thinks if he keeps pouring oil out, that Trump will let him off from being essentially a murderer. And who knows? Trump just might do that. I mean, because we're not sure where his morals are. But I'm not accusing him of being a murderer by any stretch. But, he's going to say, you know, people like that kill people all the time. What's the problem? I'm sure, which is what he's been doing so far. I don't know what to make of this meeting. I mean, clearly Russia is pulling some antics in the Ukraine. Every time they do something like that, partly I think it's they want to do it, and partly, like Lou says, they want to know what everybody's reaction is going to be. And so far, there's none. I mean, I'm surely not advocating a land war in Ukraine against, you know, Russia, but I think the chances of the NATO group as it is right now, especially since most of them can't stand Trump, I don't see any sort of unless worldwide you're gonna pull Russia out of the payment system. But I don't know if you guys ever, for some reason, just because they have all kinds of crazy stuff on there. Talk about the great unwashed site. I still have opened my computer at home to Yahoo, Matty, and they have all kinds of crazy stuff on there. I mean, it's the most bizarre. I guess it's not much different than MSN, but they claim that during the campaign, they offered Putin, or the recommendation was to offer Putin a $50 million penthouse in New York. Just let him use it for free if he wanted to. That was somebody's idea. First of all, how did somebody find that out? And secondly,
it's a nice perk.
Yeah, they're that buddy with the dude. I mean, what the hell? I mean, how often does he come to New York? I mean, when was the last time? Can you imagine if he came over here and for some big estate visit, and they said, well, you know, where's he staying? At the Waldorf or someplace? Oh no, he's got his own place. Where'd he get his own place? Well, Trump gave it to him. how would that play? Even in this crazy world we're in, that would be an interesting morning of news, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah.
I
would agree.
I can't even imagine where it would land, but it just would be people going, you gotta be kidding me. what would happen if your lovely girlfriend, you said, let's go take a trip to London. Yeah, I've never been to London, let's go. Where are we staying? Don't worry, I got my own spot. She'd say, what, have you been holding out on me? Right? I mean, what do you mean you got an apartment in London? Well, what do you do over there? I mean, you can only imagine the questions flying out. Anyway, so John, have you figured out exactly to trade this? I know we keep rolling our puts back and forth. We could have used another dollar out of the XLE, which I don't think we're going to get today. We could have used another 50 cents out of gold, which we might get today. But who knows, but I doubt it. But it's weird.
Yeah, I mean, I've been, by accident, done a lot of this stuff, but I've been, you know, pretty successful in doing, you know, some of these roles. You know, I had some pretty good timing. Like I said, it happened nicely for me on some of these things, but it's definitely not, very scientifically tradable by any stretch of the imagination, because everything flips on a dime, so.
Well, I mean, the critique, my own critique, when I look at the mirror at the end of the year, is, I mean, obviously the screw up, if there was one, I mean, it's all for all the right reasons, is, like most people, I'm afraid of everybody declaring success and me selling a 68 call in the XLE and a thing's 72. Or Saudis get pissed off at us, and a week from now, oil's back to, you know, 70 instead of 50. So I don't want to be in the way. I want to protect everybody. But if it runs up, I want to be part of the run up.
Right.
Same way with gold. I still believe that one of these days these inflation numbers are going to start coming out truthfully, and one day we're going to walk in and gold's up $60. So the last thing I want to do is sell, you know, 19.5 calls in the GDX and have the thing be 21 going. I finally got my move, and now I'm basically, you know, an idiot, a type of thing. You know, but looking back on it, if every time it got near 19.5 this year, I would have sold the 19.5s 2 weeks out, God's sake, John, I'd have made $5. Or, you know, and it would have been 20-25%. You know, but you know, it's always easy to trade last year. It's next year that's the problem, right?
Yeah, it's always easy to armchair quarterback this kind of stuff, right?
Well, I mean, if you do the math, you say, okay, I'm selling a $20 item, and every 2 weeks I'm getting 20, you know, 20 cents. Well, hell, that's 1%, right? If I do it twice a month, that's a hell of a year. The last thing you want to do though is sell one at 20 cents when you think something's going up, and then you're going, you know, the other
now, who
way.
In the world would be calling you right now at 7:48? Who doesn't know that you're alive 6 to 8 in the morning?
I know exactly who that is.
For God's sake.
Who do you think it is?
I don't know, but I guarantee they know that you're doing a show from 6 to 8.
The one person in the world who probably doesn't.
Salvador?
No, he does.
I don't know.
Same level. No, it's
oh, Nate.
Nate.
I knew it had to be one of your guys.
It was one of my guys, and I told him I'd leave money under the mat for him this morning. I forgot to. So, because he cleaned up all the snow for us.
He did. The block looks very nice.
It looks real nice. And, boy, John, when Manny was talking about the Sears Tower, talk about
right.
Bizarre. Normally, when you get this ice stuff, it's like when stuff melts, you get ice cubes on the side, on the top of the roof. And if you get one of those things, I mean, you're pretty much toast. But this storm was so weird. The stuff came sideways with this big wind, and the slush essentially, you know, stuck to the side of the building. So the entire side of the building has fallen down to the street. All the slush had stuck to it.
Well, that's why the Washington Wells train stop was closed last night, and it made the commute nasty for me and everyone else. But the whole side of the scaffolding of the building fell down on top of the train stop.
Really?
At Washington Wells, as the ice melted, part of the building came with it, you know, one of those old buildings.
Yep.
And they had to close the train station and had to rope off like a 3-block radius, or at least a 2-block radius around, you know, where you get on,
you know,
and everything.
Building, you know what building that is? That's Lizard Boy, Leanne, what's his name? Last name. The guy used to be on the exchange floor that shorted, that used to be his building. He shorted, 10 times more of a stock than was out there, John? This is years ago. Made an absolute fortune. And everybody came after him, the SEC and everything else, and he got away with it. He totally got away with it. He made, you know, like, I'm going to say 30 million shares he shorted, made it like a 60 cents a share.
Wow.
But the guy's one of the most disgusting human beings that ever walked. I won't give his last name, but.
What happened to the role that you have to have the shares to borrow?
That's before then. Plus, he was a specialist on the Chicago Stock Exchange. He'd become a member there, so he essentially was a dealer.
Well, I'm not going to say that me and some of my coworkers were putting bets down yesterday, but while we were supposed to be working. But we were standing by the window. We're on the like fifth floor. We were standing by the window, looking down at the unsuspecting people below as huge ice chunks were falling off the buildings yesterday, and betting on who was going to get hit. And we saw a couple people take one right in the noggin, and it wasn't enough to knock you down, but it definitely didn't feel great.
Well, they're not like a pointy ice cube.
Right.
Which could go right through you. They're just like chunks of slush.
Yeah, exactly. And one guy took one right right in the head, and it sort of knocked him off balance, but he was okay.
Yeah, I hope he was wearing a hat.
He wasn't wearing a hat.
Oh, God.
By the way, you can follow us on Twitter, @StocksNJocks. We have a few minutes left, but we got some tweets for you guys. Bob writes in, why can't the Fed say we're going on automatic? Quarter point rate hike each quarter in 2019, let the market react now and give stability to the industry for the whole year.
Because they've figured out kind of what I think the listeners and we have figured out, that in the last month or two, we've hit a serious wall, especially in housing and some other areas. And if it continues that way, by next June, you probably don't want to do a hike.
Right.
I'm thinking they'll probably do the one in September, which gets them to, 2.5, Jan? Which is reasonably close to probably the 3 they want to get to. But there's probably no impetus to have to do one again in March right now. If you do, it's probably good news. If you don't, I mean, because it's the same difference if you say you're going to do it and then you don't do it. I mean, it's, right?
That's right. Bob also says, let's be clear, the trade war is not making America great again.
No. No, it's not.
Which
I think we all will agree with that one.
Michael says, banks sitting on $858 billion, I assume it's a billion, of losses. Any wonder what they are lobbying the Fed to do?
Well, I mean, the guys here, I think, have gotten rid of a lot of that. I think the Fed bought some of that with those mortgages. I think
of course.
I think they ate some of those losses.
Of course.
Let's expand that tweet a little bit. John, do you have even a suspicion what in the hell these guys are looking for when they raided Deutsche Bank yesterday?
I have a suspicion.
I mean, what do you think they're looking for? For those that don't know, the Deutsche Bank office in Frankfurt was essentially raided, for lack of a better term, by how many bazillion people from the regulatory areas, and they're grabbing computers and they're grabbing everything and allegedly looking for money laundering stuff. I mean, you know, this is what happens when you let this crap happen. I mean, I rag about this all the time. John and I went over and did lecturing at Dresdner Bank. It's a gorgeous place, huge place. I mean, there's no reason why that bank wasn't big enough to make money, blah, blah, blah. And sure enough, a couple years later, they're bought by Deutsche Bank. And I'll bet if you went back, if you Wikipedia Deutsche Bank, you'd probably have them buying how many of these places, Maddie, in the last, since that was 1991. So if you went back 27 years, I bet you got them buying five other banks. I mean, I don't know that for a fact, but I'm guessing. Why? Now, if these guys go under, what percentage are they? There used to be laws here, John, that no company, no bank could have more than, was it 8% of deposits in the country? Now we've got four that do, right? I mean, we keep having these laws saying we're going to break we don't want size, and yet every year they get bigger. I mean,
right.
We either don't believe what we're saying, or we're incapable of actually making something happen. Or I don't know what the story is, or we're just lying to people. One of those. I don't know which one it is, or what were those tests, Matty? A and B and C, that type of thing. I mean, what are we doing? I mean, Citigroup. I think has the biggest. They might not be, but I think they're like 12% of the deposits.
Well, yeah. Well, we regulate but don't enforce. That's basically where it's at.
And when they get, I would say that the banking system, if there were five or six more good sized banks, I'd be much more comfortable, because every bank gets something they do something well or badly in. When Continental was one of the top 10 banks, they bleeped up by not recognizing competition coming in the trucking industry, and they were knee deep or shoulder deep. And with all these trucking companies that, essentially, when their paper was no good and the prices came down, were caught with too many trucks. And Continental Bank at one point owned 90 bazillion trucks from these places that went under. But First National, that wasn't what they did. They were more into consumers with Visa cards and stuff. It wasn't what American National did. It wasn't what Manny Hanny did or any of those places. Everybody sort of has their different niche. And that's the beauty of having some kind of competition. And that's the reason why the Fed really is there. It started out by being, the guys in anybody who's in the agricultural area, which, most of the country was at the time, and still a lot of the square footage here is. And what do you think happens every spring? Maddie, you're from Iowa. Every farmer goes to the bank and they borrow money for the seed and the fertilizer and all that crap, right? And over the course of the summer, they sell their corn and they pay them back, right?
That makes sense to me.
But when you had how many people doing that in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and you had that big sucking sound, every March is when you give people the dough, and all of a sudden it's being used, and all of a sudden you're flush come October, and what do you do with it all winter until the guy comes back again? Plus, you're locked into one industry. So what the Fed was supposed to do, still to this day pretty much does, is if all these people do different things with different timing, they're supposed to make sure that the money can move around from one to the other. So the places in New York can essentially lend money that way in March. So the local bank isn't 95% agriculture. It might only be 60, which is still high, but still it's not 90. And by the way, the guy in New York maybe gives some ag loans that he'd love to do. So it becomes 5% of his portfolio or 10. And everybody gets to spread this around. And if one guy who's so concentrated does go under, the Fed will go in and do what they have to do to that place. But it's still, if he's, 2% of the system, it's not anything that anybody's going to, we can deal with it. So, but now all of a sudden you're down to these four people. Anyway, it's just kind of weird. So, Jan.
Real quick, David Parks writes in, he says, as you pull up your accounts and look at your 401k, for all of those who are clever enough to call Chief at PTI, go ahead and open the champagne.
Yeah, well, thank you, David. The people who did the, I'm just never going to look at my statement on the way up, now for whatever reason feel that that's the house's money. But somehow that was their style. So if you went from $1 to $10 and it goes down to $7, you almost kind of owe it to them. It's like losing the last hand in blackjack. Well, it was up so many, it's no big deal. But you can't think that way. Don't lose the last hand. Win the last hand and get up and go. I mean, that would be more my style. I mean, right? Because I mean, it's your money, you know. And SP futures down 6, Dow futures down 76. I'm going to say Ohio State wins big, Matty. What do you think?
I would agree. Not big though, but they win.
Really? Okay, John. Talk to you on Tuesday. Have a good weekend. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.